Welcome to The Defiant Spirit, a podcast about meaning, purpose, and resilience. I'm Dr. Baruch Halevi, also known as B, and now let's discover your Defiant Spirit.
Welcome back to the Viktor Frankl Meaning Academy, where we talk about all things Viktor Frankl and Dr. Daniel A. Franz's mediocre and dated wardrobe.
There we go. That's for all of our YouTube subscribers. The good doctor himself. Yeah, I may be wearing a cardigan, but you're not cool enough to wear a Viktor Frankl t-shirt.
Holy moly, you're like a Frankl superhero.
I kind of am. I'm feeling very, very meaningful today.
I feel like, you know, the cardigan comes off and the spandex comes out. And
easy, man, easy. We don't need to talk about that kind of bedroom behavior.
Well, welcome everybody to the conversation that happens almost weekly, unless Dr. Daniel A. Franz cancels on me, in which case then we have to punt for a while.
But that is not accurate whatsoever. I've been recording religiously and missing you tremendously, B. That's like 2 weeks in a row where my audience was stuck listening to me alone and not you, man. So,
at least I hope they
enjoyed it, but I know they enjoy this more.
I hope they're listening on audio because that outfit, brother. So, well, I guess that takes us into the roast, right?
Because yeah, let's roast. By the way, it is getting warm in here. I'm just going straight Frankl t-shirt, man. I was saving the cardigan for the big reveal, but anyway.
Whoa, man, this is like Superman meets Viktor Frankl. So the roast. I didn't listen to the whole thing. I watched highlights of it, but I watched a lot of highlights of the Tom Brady roast. If those of you who, you know, don't follow sports or just aren't on sort of like pop culture out there, it was a pretty big deal. It happened, I think it was last week, maybe, I don't know. But it was a roast in sort of an old fashioned kind of no holds barred, just open season on Tom Brady and everybody around Tom Brady, the Patriots and his world. And at first I was a little horrified watching it, I must say. It was just so edgy and raw. Some of the things that were said were like, holy moly, did they just say that on, you know, in public? And however, I listened to some debriefs afterwards about it, and it just got me thinking. One of the takeaways was it was a sign or symbol of an end of an era, and I think, frankly, an era that needs to end, and I'm grateful that it has, and that is the era of cancel culture. There was something liberating and freeing of listening to mostly guys, some women, roast each other, and felt like I was inside of a locker room. Now, that can turn quickly into a toxic masculine environment. We all know, as a dude, we've all been there. However, there was also something real and raw and honest and fearless about listening to that kind of banter in the public arena again.
It is nice to know that we can share good humor. Well, I don't know if it was good. I haven't watched it yet. I know I've heard many good things about it and recommendations to pay attention. But, you know, if you pay attention to any podcast out there, and again, listeners know that we listen to Joe Rogan. He talks about this cancel culture all the time, how comedians are frequently canceled. And yeah, it can be difficult. We do live in a time where if your opinion is not, I would say not with the majority, but that's not true either. If your opinion doesn't fit the cultural narrative, whatever that culture is for the moment, you get shut down. And we're losing the opportunity to have good discussions around humor, around politics, around sports, around each other's behavior, around parenting. And, you know, you and I have even talked about sometimes how we tread lightly when it comes to certain topics.
So, you know, I think a lot of it has tied to COVID. I do believe it's not coincidental that COVID and then all of the sort of social upheaval and then social extremism erupted on the other side of that. Take, for instance, the pronoun conversation. You want to use pronouns, you don't want to use pronouns, you want to use different pronouns. We got to this point where if you didn't participate in the pronoun posturing on your bio, like I go by him, his, I refused, by the way, to say that. I don't buy into it. if you do, that's wonderful. We should be able to have an open dialogue of, you know, why? Why wouldn't I participate in that? What am I? But I didn't put them up there. And I started to receive a lot of grief in the process. There was no room for dissent. There was no room for dialogue. I was called names for not wanting to sort of toe the line. And that was just one of 10 examples that all erupted post-COVID. So I think there's something definitely tied to cancel culture, to muting debate, and to our COVID, post-COVID reality.
Well, I think you're wrong.
Well, okay, then let's get into it.
See, and look, that's the beauty of a friendship, is we can say that. No, I tend to agree with you, but I think we blame COVID for too much. I think this was happening long before COVID, and of course, COVID just exacerbated it. But, my listeners heard me talk about Jonathan Haidt's new book, The Anxious Generation, along with Abigail Schreier's Bad Therapy. Both these are pointing to some of the factors that have infantilized our current generation, smartphones largely being, and not just the fact of having smartphones, but social media, what kids see, what young adults see, what you know, not even young adults now, the current adults, how they grew up with this opportunity, this me first thinking. Right. I'm listening to Joseph Campbell's the Myth of a Thousand Faces, or the, I can't remember. Joseph Campbell, for those that don't know, you know, the leading psychologist, philosopher who wrote about the hero's journey in the past 100 years. He passed away, I believe it was 87 or 89. But some amazing work in talking about how we all need trials and struggles from adolescence into adulthood. But today we live in a time where parents will mow over the struggles and suffering of their children. And therefore they never have to grow up and face these things. And then they get into the real world and mommy and daddy can't be there for them. And so they throw these adult temper tantrums of, you can't say that to me. You have to call me what I think you should call me. Even if you don't know what I think you should call me, you need to figure that out. You know, that's the pronoun argument.
Yeah.
It's a difficult environment out there, and you get canceled if you don't toe the line.
Well, and we're saying the same thing, because I don't think that it's because of COVID. I think COVID ripped off some, I don't know, false sense of security that we had prior to COVID. And then people just got freaking scared. And especially, you know, like, I get it too. I was raising kids inside a home that were missing high school graduations. My kid never even met anybody in his school because we moved here right before. And then whatever, bottom line is he finished up high school on Zoom and didn't know a single person in his world, because again, the complexities. But I was scared for, like, what kind of an existence is he going to face with that upside down world that we're living in right now. And I just think a lot of people just kept going with that fear and wanting to protect their kids, and then buying into, well, you know, I'll support them no matter what. They're delicate. They can't handle things. I counseled a person who allowed their child to remove body parts because of, a trans identification issue. I'm not commenting on that here. All I'm saying is, I don't know if that would have happened in a pre-COVID reality. I think that the person I was talking to was terrified that their child would be in harm's way if they didn't get their way on this issue, that they would be more suicidal. Again, not about the trans issue or the pronouns issue or anything. I just think that COVID came along and terrified a generation of parents that we sort of gave up on parenting to some degree. And stop saying no. Stop saying, you know, the hard truths.
The idea of stop saying no, I think it's been a big problem. And I mean, for me personally, one of my favorite stories when I was first confronted with this, and maybe it wasn't saying no, maybe it was the participation trophy that you and I have talked about, was I was running the local recreational soccer league my daughters both played in, because we know soccer is definitely a superior sport to most things that we offer here in the U.S. But we're talking about the big tournament, the big end of the season tournament coming up, And I said, look, let's save some money on budget here. We've got a good budget. We've got all this stuff, but let's not drop a couple thousand dollars on cheap plastic medals that every child receives when they're, I mean, hundreds of them, maybe thousands of them, right? I was like, we don't need to do that. Let's put that money into something. You know, most kids take that, they look at it, they're like, okay, thanks, and they throw it away. But the parents on that board, I was rioted through mutiny. I was about to be thrown out of the room for suggesting every child doesn't deserve a participation trophy. And that is part of the difficulty we're facing today. Is, and you can read about it in countless books about the work environment or you know, the different generations right now struggling to fit into a situation where they're not getting praise or a raise every 3 to 6 months.
And people are going to hear this, and I'm sure we're going to get some pushback on, you know, anti this and we're anti that and blah, blah, blah. And it has nothing to do with the political social issue du jour. It has to do with a fundamental resilience conversation, right? I don't care if you do or don't agree with the his, her thing or the trans thing or the BLM thing or whatever. If we can't enter into meaningful debate and not feel like everything's a microaggression, an attack, and that we can't handle dissenting opinions or opposition, then we're just breeding an entire generation, and it's not just the kids, it's adults too, who can't handle resilience. We aren't resilient.
I think that's really the key of it. I mean, I don't know. I think we're too, I'd like to assume we're two fairly level-headed guys. I don't think there's much that we would say we're absolutely against this and this is terrible without a conversation, without at least explaining our background and our beliefs. And would love to enter into some of those conversations. But I agree with you in that resilience seems to be the key these days, that we have, much of what I've read recently refers back to the greatest generation of World War II. One of the most, our teacher, the great Dr. Frankl, right? Like 3 years in a Nazi concentration camp, comes out and does amazing things. Do we say his life was better because of it? Absolutely not. Right. Would he have wanted to suffer that? Hell no. But he did, and he developed resilience because of it. Reading Campbell's work, he talks about the ancient myths of different tribes and cultures and indigenous people, or even not even an indigenous, and major cultures of the past. Adolescents needed to go through some kind of trial, not just a symbolic trial, a trial where they nearly faced death, the death of their childhood, to enter into adulthood. We don't have that anymore. We have your worst trial is being bullied on social media, which causes, sadly, many kids to commit suicide. Where we need to get back to, as parents, as schools, as universities, teaching this resilience, teaching that, yes, if I set a date that you have to turn something in, damn it, you're turning it in or you get a zero. Not, I just saw this example. My daughter is finishing up a paper after finals week, as teachers are grading. I'm like, what are you doing? Well, my professor said I could have a call. It was Wednesday, like Wednesday after finals week concluded. I'm like, are you kidding me?
And there's real life consequences to not addressing this issue. And we're all experiencing it. I'm experiencing it particularly as a Jew watching what's happening on college campuses. You know, this is the manifestation of not being able, not being resilient, not being able to handle challenge. As an example, I'm sure everybody knows, on many, not all, but many college campuses, you have young terrorists now posing as once upon a time pro-Palestinian supporters. Now they're pro-Hamas. Now they're anti-Jew. Now they're making demands. Now they're causing violence and saying horrific, heinous things. And here's the point. You have every right to have a pro-Palestinian stance. I'm, by the way, as an Israeli, I'm pro-Palestinian. We can get into that conversation. Let's have that conversation. Every time I try with somebody of that mindset, they won't talk to me. They just call me names. They call those kids, or, you know, the pro-Israel crowd, they call them horrific names. They literally won't talk to them. Every Israeli I know, every Jew I know, every American sort of patriot I know says, I'll have the conversation. But you know what you get on the other side? You get masks because they don't want to be seen. That you get human shields. They won't let you in. They won't let the press in. They'll only talk to people who agree with them. They've created this like resilient, free echo chamber where they're literally destroying themselves and the places they inhabit, like college campuses, all because of there's no room for dialogue.
But don't we seem to be encountering this, right? You and I say this all the time, you know, in times like these, there have always been times like these. But it seems to be more present and more frequent that these massive interruptions to daily functioning. Just a few years ago, we had the Portland riots, and then there was different riots. Then there was the St. Louis riots all the time, disrupting local daily operations, but on a national level too. Why is that? Is that a lack of resilience? Is that too much social media? Why the masks? Why not civil discord? Why all the violence?
Well, I think it was at UCLA or Columbia, or one of them, where they're barricaded in the, yeah, it was in Columbia. They were barricaded inside that building. They literally had taken hostages. I mean, you call it what you want. They had three janitors there against their will. They wouldn't let anybody in, and they were making demands. You know what one of the demands was? They wanted gluten-free options, and they were calling it humanitarian aid because they hadn't eaten in 24 hours. And they were pretending that they were justice warriors in Gaza, when in fact they're just spoiled children at an Ivy League university who want gluten-free meals after starving for 24 hours. And so you ask why, and I just think we're seeing a sort of speeding up of these things because the resilience is less than ever before, and the virality of things is more than ever before. You know, social media, this is a virus. It's spreading. It just happens to be spreading through social media.
Yeah, that strikes me. That reminds me, maybe a decade ago, one of my favorite authors, Seth Godin, wrote something along the lines of the idea virus, right? Like how, and it was a very positive book in marketing and business, like how ideas spread. But now we're facing a lot of the negatives of that. I know people, there are more people than you and I trying to put these positive messages out there, right? A lot of the people we listen to, there's a lot of goodness out in the world. Why isn't that catching? Why isn't logo therapy catching? Why aren't these good messages of healthy parenting and building resilience and allowing our children to struggle, failing ourselves and conquering failure? Why aren't these ideas catching on, B?
And another reason, I guess, along those lines, why is because one of the other demands that these, you know, college terrorists were making was, we want to be absolved, I forgot what the word is, from all of consequences of our demonstrations, not demonstrations, of all of our destruction, not destruction of all of our hate speech and, you know, maybe hate crimes at this point. They didn't want to have consequences. And, you know, that's what I think a distinction, because in the past, civil rights movement, you know, protesters, by the way, were nonviolent, not violent, never said that. They were willing to go to jail. Martin Luther King went to, you know, prison in Selma for Alabama for his choices. And he was willing to go there for them. He didn't ask to have his record expunged, right? So responsibility, logo therapy is about taking radical responsibility for your choices.
Yeah, that's and I think the consequences are part of the action, right? It lends credence to, I will face these consequences because I believe in this cause so much. If you don't believe in the cause and you're throwing masks on just to gain attention and a gluten-free sandwich or some, I don't think you can make gluten-free sandwich. We'll talk about that some other time. But right, like in these protests through history, the consequences were part of the protest. But now we face this generation that maybe has never faced consequences or had parents mow over consequences. And that is not how life works. As the great Jordan Peterson tells us, that's just not dealing in reality. And when we don't deal in reality, we live in this upside down fantasy world that, well, is kind of bound for destruction.
I was listening to a guy from Shark Tank, a business guy. I can't remember his name. Anyways, he was being interviewed about would he hire somebody from who protested. He said, unequivocally not. And they said, you know, that doesn't seem fair. And he was also talking about, by the way, that their faces are now being captured, even if they're hiding behind a mask, like with eye recognition now and all these things, forever now they will be marked in our society because of what they participated in. And it's going to have consequences, everything from them being able to get a mortgage to getting a job to, you know, they're participating in heinous things. And the woman said, that doesn't seem fair. He says, it's literally the definition of fair. If you stand by what you do, then you have to accept the consequences. And what she was saying was they shouldn't have to have these kind of that consequences forever. And he's saying, that's just the way life is. You don't have to like it. There's always consequence for our actions. And that's, I think, the fundamental issue of what we're talking about here.
Well, I think that's, again, that is just reality as it has been for thousands of years as humans have evolved to where we are now. You are responsible for your decisions and your consequences, but something in the past few decades has changed that. And that's why many of us feel we are living in this upside down, inside out, unreality of, wait, you don't have to deal with consequences anymore. How does that happen? How do the rest of us have to face consequences of our decisions? But some are lucky enough not to. It's just not reality.
And I think it's too easy to throw these college students under the bus because I've been asking, where are their parents? Most of them are not paying for college. Most of their parents are paying for college. And, you know, a parent who doesn't say to their kid, either don't do that, or if you do that, no, there's consequences. And they're not being that, they're not saying that. There's nobody parenting these kids. And, you know, they're grown adults to some degree, but they're also being left to their own devices. Just like that parent who said to their 13-year-old, you know, I empower you to make a decision about your body that's going to affect you for the rest of your life. A child needs some guidance here.
Yeah. And that's where I would argue these are not adults, right? Chronologically, maybe on their driver's license, yes, the law considers them to be adults, but we're facing, again, continuing generations of people chronologically into young adulthood who have the tools, the attitude, the behaviors of an infant. And when we talk about the science of psychology and developmental psychology, when we as humans don't go through the appropriate developmental phases, which are not easy, which we just don't fly from one to the other. When we don't go through these developmental stages, we stay stuck as a child, as an infant. Children and infants can't run the world, right? And I'm kind of afraid they can't help me retire at some point, right? I mean, each generation looks at the next one as like, yeah, you guys got this. We're going to be okay. And I can take a step back. And I think we see more and more, there is a fear for the future. What is it going to look like with these adults that haven't gone through the appropriate developmental stages?
Yes, and coming back to that sort of roast, again, I think we're breaking through now the other side of that, where lots of people are stepping up and stepping out, and young people, and saying, hey, I'm ready to take responsibility for my choices. So here's an example. My son is a counter protester. He goes around his college campus to fight the pro Hamas groups. He's going off to Israel next week for the summer. He's very passionate about it. So one of the things he did was he and his fraternity brothers at 2 a.m. would go to the campus where they were all illegally camped out and nobody was enforcing the laws or the rules of the campus. And he, nonviolence, but he bought a loudspeaker, and at 2 a.m. every morning, they would drive around the encampment and be yelling things like, good morning, anti-Semites, right? This is your middle of the night wake-up call. We want to make sure you have a bad night's sleep so that you can struggle in your classes tomorrow like the rest of us, because you're, you know, blah, blah, blah. I said, you know, look, you may end up getting in trouble. You might even be arrested. I support you as long as you take responsibility for the consequences of your choices. He says, I'm willing to go to jail. I'm willing to have a record because this is necessary. To me, that's the point, right? Like Martin Luther said, you're going to sin, sin bravely. Like, take responsibility for your choices.
Absolutely. And make, I guess that's the agreement to that is make brave choices, make brave decisions, go out there and do things responsibly. If you disagree with this, take responsible action, you know, speak about it, share your ideas with others. But I think the more we do that, we speak out against these, not just the current protesters, but these attitudes that happen, these miniature riots that seem to happen on a regular basis, the more we speak out about it, maybe the more change it has. And the more that those of us that feel this is wrong or irresponsible or unrealistic, maybe that message starts to spread. We don't have to live in fear anymore as long as we feel comfortable facing the consequences as today. There might be a few people that stopped listening to us because we spoke out about, you know, these poor behaviors. So maybe we talk about what else is the counter? Radical responsibility, facing the consequences of life. What else?
I think another big one is, again, back to that sort of roasting thing that was going on. I watched it and it was really uncomfortable. It was at times.
That was beautiful. I've never seen that face on you before.
It was. So
that tells me a lot about how uncomfortable it was.
I was listening to some of the things they were saying, like, you know, Robert Kraft and Tom Brady got upset about this one, but they said something about him going to get a massage, you know, and it was very like, whoa, like that's like, they said something about Aaron Hernandez, who killed himself, and they made a joke about it. It's like, oh boy, like this is like uncomfortable. But the point is, what they all agreed to going into that was we're going to choose to not be offended. We're going to go into this not looking for reasons to feel marginalized and victimized, right? Just because you say it doesn't mean I have to internalize it. There was just a resilience in that crowd around that it was refreshing because everybody's offended by everything. I said something in a conversation about a totem pole. I was using it as a reference, like you don't want to be low man on the totem pole. And the people who were there, one person got really offended and said, that's cultural appropriation. And how dare I? I said, are you Native American? Because if I offended your Native, no, I'm not. I just speak on behalf of Native Americans. Well, I'm sorry, but if we sit around doing this all day long and not assuming A, that the person who uses the reference doesn't have some decent intentions, and B, we're just choosing to be offended by everything all the time, right? We can't say anything. We can't communicate. And we live our lives without, you know, without resilience.
I've been quoting this idea for so long. I forget who it comes from, but I use this a lot in group communication work as well as couples communication work. When we start to focus on how we're communicating instead of what we're communicating about, when we start to pick apart a person's choice of words or tone, whatever, we're missing the issue. And that is a very irresponsible.
That's a good point. That's a great point.
Why, thank you. Immature and irresponsible defense mechanism. I'll say it again, developmentally, psychologically childish to focus on how it was said or the choice of the words or the mistake I just made and having to go back and correct myself instead of what is the idea we're commenting on here? Let's get to the heart, to the core. And that, unfortunately, again, that's just good communication in a group context, in a couple's context, in a family context, yet we're not doing that in a societal context.
People say sometimes after our show or my other podcasts, I didn't agree with everything you said. I said, I don't agree with everything I say. The point isn't...
I don't agree with anything you say much of the time.
The point isn't agreement. The point is the process. And that's what you're saying, right? It's like, if we're so focused on the way it looks and sounds and feels, we miss the beauty of being in it together, like working our way through the effing mud trying to get to some clarity and some truth and having the courage to try on ideas and opinions that don't fit anymore or don't make sense. That, you know what, you got to sometimes kind of wear the thing to realize it's not right. It doesn't fit.
Spoiler alert, this conversation between B and I is rarely scripted. And as two extroverts, whatever we're thinking is going to come out of our mouth. And maybe a couple hours later, we're going to say, I'm going to refine that. Not, again, responsibly, I'll face the consequences of it because I know how I operate. And most of the stuff coming out, I believe it. But there will be days where I come back and say, maybe I'll take a look at that. Maybe I'll take a look at that idea or how I spoke that or what I had to say about it. But I think that's the discord we're missing in the public forum is the ability to say, to challenge each other, to have conversations that say, you know, it's funny, you and I fake challenge each other so often. It's, I don't know whether it's here or in your search for meaning. I mean, I'm kind of embarrassed for you sometimes that you're like, but Dan, I disagree. And I'm like, no, you don't. We agree on the same. I'm not embarrassed for you. I'm embarrassed for both of us. Right. Cause we issue these fake challenges just to illustrate that, but we agree on so much, but I think that's.
But sometimes we genuinely disagree, but then we realize we're not disagreeing on the content. We're disagreeing on the pathway there. That's what your point is. Yeah. Right. Like I can have a conversation with a pro Hamas person and we are definitely going to walk away disagreeing, but I guarantee you, we can find some common ground. Like I don't want innocent Palestinians to die. Now, why they're dying is where we're going to have to get into it. But like, let's stop just focusing on everything we disagree on, everything that offends. Like, can we find any common ground? We're coming into the final stretch of the presidential race. Strap your seatbelt.
Here we go. Yep. Now we're getting canceled. Damn, if we didn't get canceled 10 minutes ago, all three of our viewers just dropped off, including Running Man.
You know, that we're going to get canceled in families, not just, you know, like families are going to start canceling each other again and friends are going to cancel each other. You're going to have so much fallout over this election. Stakes are high. Emotions are high. Like the extremes are being, you know, becoming more extreme. I mean, this is going to be a rough 4 months or whatever it is.
Doesn't have to be. Doesn't have to be. You can make the choice, right? There's a beautiful lyric. I've quoted it often in an Avett Brothers song that says, when your life isn't affected by the man that is elected, that's a choice. Yes, elections have consequences. They'll have global consequences. They'll have local consequences. And we need to deal with those consequences. But it doesn't have to be a great triumph or a great tragedy. It's just the way democracy works. And we get to get on with our lives and take care of our families and go about day-to-day business. And things might change. The cost of bread may go up and may go down. The cost of gas may go up, may go down. There might be different things that happen. But in the end, you get to choose, as the great Dr. Frankl teaches us, we get to choose our reactions. We don't get to choose the situation or how things in the world always go. We can impact it, but we always, always get to choose our reaction.
Amen.
So what can people do about this, V? Choose their reaction, make responsible choices, engage in resilience building. We talk about it often. You can build resilience.
Look at when you're being hurt or offended. First of all, nobody ever hurts or offends you. You choose to be offended. I've been called a kike many times in my life, which is a derogatory term for a Jew. You know, whoever says it to me, it just dropped and, you know, their stock price has plummeted because somebody who uses that word or the N-word or fill in your blank word, they've just resorted to base, you know, human behavior. I no longer respect them. It's not, I don't get upset. I just look at them differently because I've made a choice a long time ago. I'm not going to be offended by these things. And I think we all have to look at the ways when we're offended of like, how am I choosing to be a victim? How am I choosing to allow somebody to affect me in this way? That's my choice.
Do I offend you if I suggest we change the name to the podcast to the Kike and the Kraut?
Whoa, that's going to change our demographic for sure.
I think Kraut is a negative term for German, but probably not as offensive as Kike, but you know,
But the point though is like, I would rather be live in a culture where somebody says the thing than takes the thing underground. And that's coming full circle for me, why that roast was so great, because say the thing that everybody's thinking or feeling, get it out. That's the point of humor. That's why comedians, they've been on the sort of the vanguard of stereotypes and, you know, the uncomfortable stuff our society deals with. So, because it needs to be said sometimes, it needs to be laughed at, it needs to be addressed, not to say the hurtful things about Jews in this case, just means that it's going underground and it manifests on college campuses later on. And at that point, it's toxic. Like,
great. Go ahead.
I'd rather you and I talk about the kike and the kraut proactively.
I can't believe I got you to say it.
And talk about what that means and, you know, why it is or isn't appropriate, et cetera, than to have it go underground and to be afraid of it.
Good. And we all know this inherently. Good humor, good comedy always dances on the edge of what's culturally appropriate. And when you dance on the edge, sometimes you go forward or go over the edge. And you know, but that's comedy. In other terms, though, that's been the greatest advancements in our history and culture, whether it's in science, psychology, philosophy, right? Discord and disagreement in psychology between Freud and Adler and Frankl gave us three of the most beautiful schools of modern psychology that people have grown from there. They've debated that in modern psychology, philosophy. Do you think Socrates and Aristotle and Plato always agreed about how the formation of a democratic society and the foundations of scientific beliefs? Absolutely not. That's what created such a robust field that now 3,500 years later, we still refer to, we still base our lives off of. When you don't bring it into the light, when you don't have the conversation and it goes underground, it will be forgotten. It will not see the light of day long. And people won't be talking about it decades or certainly not centuries later.
Yeah, freedom of speech is essential. I've gotten challenged a few times. So you're saying be on college campuses, you don't agree with freedom of speech. I unequivocally do. I've advocated for, they were talking a while back about taking Mein Kampf, that's Hitler's manifesto, off of Amazon. I don't want it taken off of Amazon. I want people to read it and I want to debate about it. I can easily debate you into the truth if you read that book. Well, I don't want it to be removed. However, the moment it crosses into action, right? Hurtful action, hateful action, that's no longer free speech. That's the problem on college campuses. Not that people are protesting, but that they've moved beyond protesting to rioting. That's the point.
To violence, to hostage taking. Absolutely. Yeah, great example of that, censorship that we're concerned about. The author I'm reading, Abigail Schreier, Bad Therapy, the one prior to that, was a very extensive study of what you've been talking about, the gender dysphoria issues, pronouns, and allowing children below the age of 18 to make the decision to have their bodies permanently altered in favor of a different sex. Amazing book, bold journalism, and everybody canceled her. She couldn't get her book in any place except, I think, on the lower shelves of Amazon, whatever that looks like electronically, until, you know, the poet warrior Joe Rogan brought her on his show and she was able to talk about this. And then, you know, all of a sudden she started selling. This Bad Therapy book is horrible. It pisses me off. It offends me. It offends me because it accuses my field of shoddy work. And after I got over being a wee bit offended, I said, man, this is spot on. There are some accuracies here. There's some really good suggestions about what parents can do to improve their kids' situation. So we're not raising a generation of 20-year-old infants demanding that, you know, my poor behavior requires you to bring me a sandwich of my specificity. I mean, come on. If you were 3 years old and you threw a temper tantrum and your parents gave you a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, that's called reinforcing the behavior. We need to stop reinforcing poor behavior in adults.
Yeah. As an aside, I think it was University of Chicago who gave the, you know, demanders, the terrorists, everything they wanted. They gave them free tuition for protesting. They guaranteed all of the pro-Palestinian, or maybe it was Palestinian of origin, protesters free tuition. I mean, it's like, what about the kids who aren't protesting, who are good kids who need the free tuition as well? Like, why are we rewarding bad behavior? Why are we not enforcing rules and regulations? And why are we not delivering consequences? And these are the ways we're going to find our way back. And I think it, frankly, it starts with that roast and what it represented. You don't have to like it. You don't have to agree with it, but you do have to respect that a group of people were willing to say enough is enough. We're going to stop taking ourselves so seriously. We're going to stop being offended over everything. We're going to, take a collective breath and get back to some sanity.
Yeah. And I would offer, if universities continue to make these decisions, we know enrollment in secondary education like that continues to go downhill, especially when kids can leave high school and go out and learn exactly what they want to learn, right? A trade, a certificate, programming, marketing, whatever it is, and not have to take underwater basket weaving in Greek theater and deal with a bunch of tempered tantrum throwing brats in the classroom with them. If universities and college don't figure this out soon, historic universities like the University of Chicago or Columbia or these different places might not be able to operate the way they once did. So I think as more and more of us continue to look at responsible action and choosing the consequences, choosing our attitudes towards where life's going, we're going to see some things change and hopefully in a more positive direction than what we've been experiencing recently.
And I'll end with that because we began with, the roast of Tom Brady. And then we compared it to college campuses and, it could have gone the other way at this roast. People could have walked away hating and hurting and being offended. And in the end, everybody was willing to just laugh and blow off some steam. And you look at these college campuses, it's like people just take a deep breath and effing relax, right? Get back into conversation, stop being so offended, get back into dialogue, stop demanding that everybody agree with you and get into some good old fashioned, healthy Dr. D and Rabbi B debate. I can't believe I just called myself Rabbi B, but I wanted it to rhyme.
I've that for months and years. Everybody, all of you listeners there, the good Dr. B is transitioning out of his, but you still bring the spiritual component here, man.
So yeah, but it just rhymed. It just rhymed better. I needed that like extra syllable in there. So
yeah, we'll figure it out eventually. But meanwhile, while we're trying to figure that out, get out there, live your life with meaning, purpose, and resilience.
Talk to you next podcast. Until then, be well. I should have just ended with your sign off.
That's all right. That's what people come to expect from us.
Meaning, purpose, resilience later. Thank you for listening to the Defiant Spirit Podcast with me, your host, Dr. Baruch Halevi. If you like what you heard, please consider leaving a 5-star review and share this podcast with others. To learn more about the Defiant Spirit, get more inspirational content, or see how we might work together to live your Defiant Spirit, visit defiantspirit.org. Until then, take back your power and live your Defiant Spirit.